Natural Resources Subcommittee meeting of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means, and we're here today to continue the public hearing on the State Department of Forestry budget. We are continuing with the agency program and services detail, and I will turn it over to the State Forester, Mr. Jim Brown.
All right, thank you, Madam Chair. I am Jim Brown, the State Forester, and I have with me Lisa Pearson from the Department of Administrative Services. Before going into the balance of the budget presentation, I thought I would just highlight a couple things that evolved out of our questions over the last couple days. I've brought to you a copy of the board's policy document that they call the Forestry Program for Oregon. This is the fourth edition, the first one having been written in 1977. And what you might look at is pages 6, 7, and 8, which outline the board's mission, vision, values, and objectives. The balance of the document just talks about those in some detail. And the reason that this document's important is it allows a citizens board like the Board of Forestry to have a public discussion about the businesses that they're in and what are they trying to achieve, and then use that the results of that conversation, which is represented in this document, as they then take on specific issues such as revisions to Forest Practices Act or the development of a forest management plan for the state forest that they manage. And for me, the most powerful statements are the vision statements on page 6 and the first two, and I've talked briefly about these on Monday, was they want to have healthy forests, all of Oregon's forests, providing a sustainable flow of good service values such as water, fish, air, wildlife, and products. And then secondly, landowners willingly investing to sustain a healthy forest and providing those values. And it's really, it's that tension, if you will, that they recognize that then, if you will, facilitates the conversations and how they make decisions. So we had talked about that, and I thought that was maybe useful for the committee to see, you know, kind of how that fits with the organization. And then yesterday, we got into, I thought, a quite good conversation about insect and disease, really forest health in the state. And I've handed out to you a packet that has three pieces. The first is a annual survey report on forest health.
Jim, before you get too far into that, Representative Hobson has just gotten here, and as a courtesy, I was hoping that we would allow her to give her public testimony without making her take time, too much time out of her busy schedule. Thank you for coming, Representative Hobson. As a fellow appreciator of large woody debris, I welcome you to the committee.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. I couldn't have worded it more eloquently. And I appreciate being allowed to go first. And I think they'll be happy because obviously I'm going to support them and their budget to the utmost degree. And I guess my testimony is twofold, to talk about the Department of Forestry in general and statewide, and also to then bring it down to Tillamook, which, as you probably know, is a state forest in Oregon and a very important one. One of the things that I've noticed since being in the legislature is the importance of all the agencies and the fact that they all care so deeply. And I'm always amazed when I hear people make remarks about different agencies and the Department of Forestry as if they are one-sided necessarily, and I'm always amazed at the breadth of interest that the people who work for the Department of Forestry have. They are not in forestry because they are interested in medicine or teaching. Would that they were. I could go along with that very easily. They're in forestry because they care about the forests in the big picture and trees down to individual trees. And I think that our timber industry serves many masters, and these folks are put in the position of balancing it all. And I want to take you anecdotally, which I sometimes object to, but last Saturday, coincidentally, I didn't know about this until, this morning. that I was going to come do this or that you're even having the hearing on this particular issue. But last Saturday, I went on a tour of the Tillamook State Forest. I have to admit, it's probably my fifth one, so it's not like I was going to see, well, I probably was going to see new trees, but not a lot of new information. But there is a controversial one among many timber sale that is in the Tillamook State Forest. So about 70 people attended this tour, and it was done by our local forestry people. And I cannot tell you how wonderful they were. Every question that was asked, if it was dealing with animals, there was someone who was very knowledgeable about all the little critters. If it was dealing with the moss, there was somebody who was very knowledgeable about all the vegetation and all of the biological and botanical information that needed to be there. And it was led by our local forester who did a wonderful job under very different, difficult circumstances. Because as you can probably imagine, we had people representing the wide spectrum. And to use a term that I certainly don't mean to be pejorative, but we had the environmentalists there who, and again, to exaggerate a teeny bit, would probably prefer it if we didn't cut any trees whatsoever under any circumstances. And then we had one of the timber barons there, and I'm sure he wouldn't mind me calling that because he would know I was doing it with great affection. So I think you can appreciate the difficult situation this was when we met in a very cold, old, retired school auditorium that heated up very quickly. It was well done. We went out, we viewed, we toured, we listened to information. And it was one of those where you thought, my goodness, this is such an issue that needs to be balanced to provide for everything. And here we have dedicated professionals from the Oregon Department of Forestry leading it and giving out very good information. And I guess that's just one example that happened so recently that I can certainly bring it to your attention. Obviously, the Tillamook Forest is a state treasure, as we all know. And also, obviously, we're going to have a lot of work in trying to balance the needs that are there. To relate this down even more specifically to the facility in Tillamook itself that houses the office there, it's an old facility. It's overcrowded to the nth degree, really in need of some work. And I think the money in the Department of Forestry budget always goes to facilities, of course, most importantly people, which are the most important part of any budget, and supplies and equipment and all the things that I'm sure Mr. Brown and his folks will alert you to. And I guess some of the demands that are even increasing more in regard to recreational, the plan is so important, so well done. But the implementation of that is certainly going to come next, and that is going to be very difficult and very complicated. Another thing that the Department of Forestry does with great talent is to negotiate land trades. I always wiggle when I talk. But several of those have happened in Tillamook and Clatsop counties to provide land for people to use and doing innovative trades of parcels of land. And I bring to your attention the Washington County Park. Washington County, incidentally, was the only county in the state that didn't have its own park, and now we're working to get that. And that's come through the cooperation of the Department of Forestry. So there are a lot of needs for not only timber harvesting, timber management, recreational purposes. And I hate to admit it, but until just a minute ago, we could look outside and see what a glorious, wonderful day it's been, what a week it's been. In fact, what a winter it's been. It's been one that we've all very much liked. On the other hand, what has been noticeably missing from all this good weather is rain. And I certainly am not a person who can see into the future, but I don't think it would be unfair or unrealistic to say that the potential for extreme fire danger and fire happenings in the forest this coming summer are very extreme. And of course, that's something we can't predict, so you don't know how much money and those kinds of things you're going to need. But I strongly encourage you to give them everything they ask for. That may not be reasonable, but so I hope you will real step. Seriously consider their budget and the parts to it. And I'd be glad to answer any questions, although I'm not the most knowledgeable in person in the world about the details. But
are
they
there
know
any questions
everything.
For Representative? Representative Bowman first, please.
Thank you.
Hi, Representative. My question has to do with the last point that you made, which is the fact that we've had a very dry season. Clearly, there's going to be an issue about fire and what we need to do. This committee will need to struggle with the whole issue about how do we prepare as much as we can for that. Do you have any suggestions do you have history? Can you tell us any bit of wisdom that helps us as we struggle through that process?
Thank you, Representative. I wouldn't call what I have to offer wisdom or anything of that like. However, I have lived in forest lands almost all of my life, either Detroit, Oregon, or Alaska, and now in Tillamook. And I do know that it's nothing that you can plan for, as you said, but I think there always needs to be some money available. Certainly people can come back and get more after the fact. But the training, the preparation, the having the equipment on hand, and having a system set up in order to pull equipment together from other places, be it as far away from as Boise or wherever, to put that out. And no, I don't have specific details on that, but I know it's important that the Department of Forestry have the opportunity, the time, to set those plans up ahead of time.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Krieger.
Representative, could you maybe relate to us a little bit how important you feel it is that the Tillamook Forest, the class of forest, all of our state forests be managed? How that management is going to benefit the people, what the dependency of the counties are on that forest?
Thank you, Representative. I would be glad to do that in a couple of ways. Financially, it's obviously important, and it contributes to our schools. We even have one school district in Tillamook County that this last year received no state basic school support because they were able to get enough from the harvesting on the Tillamook Forest. That doesn't happen every year, but it does happen occasionally. And what's online currently in the Tillamook Forest is enough sales to produce good revenue for the counties, for both the roads and the schools. Obviously, I always focus on the schools for that. So I think that is very important. And to get back to the first part of your question, I definitely am a person who feels, and again, going back to living in Detroit and some of my best friends, forgive the expression, raped and pillaged the woods there. It wasn't good forest management. I wish I had been one who owned it, but I wasn't. So I think the need for management is critical, and I think almost everybody agrees with that now. On the other hand, I certainly can't go to the other side that says, let's not cut any trees, let's leave them all like God wanted them, particularly as long as you read a newspaper or live in a house that has any wood in it. So I think the management is absolutely critical. And I am so impressed with the plan that was developed using everybody's input into that. You know, something I left out when I was talking is the importance, and again, this is getting from the general, if you'll forgive me, down to the specific in Tillamook. The Department of Forestry there has been an intimate partner in service learning and different kinds of activities with our school district and with our children, and it's been wonderful. The kids get out there and they see things, and when I made that allusion earlier about these people training to be in forestry and would that they would be in education, I don't know if there's a connection there or what, but so many of the people in the Department of Forestry have teaching skills and come into a classroom and really have the kids right in the palm of their hands.
Continue.
Follow up. You indicated that one school was totally financed, and that means that the money that would have gone to that school then remains with the state for all other schools actually benefit in the state from that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative. That is absolutely true. Neocony School District last year did not take basic school support out of the big pot because they had enough money, and that was there for others to use. The rest of us received some, certainly,
yeah,
in both counties, but Neocony was the one that was unique. Jewell School District is quite often in that situation.
Further questions? You have more to tell us, Representative?
No, thank you, sir. I don't.
You're enthused.
I am a great,
you're
great
proud
supporter.
Great. Thank you so much
thank
for
you.
Joining us
thank
today.
You.
And Mr. Brown, if you'll return and continue to guide us through this budget discussion.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jim Brown, State Forester, for the record. I was beginning to share with you some information that we'd been discussing yesterday about insect disease in the state, and I brought you three pieces for you to look at. The first was, it's called the Annual Survey Report on Forest Health. This is a report that will be made to the Board of Forestry next week at their meeting based on the aerial survey that was conducted this last summer. And you can see on the third page of that particular handout, the principal thing that's showing up is a tussock moth infestation, in northeast Oregon that is beginning to pop up. We had a major infestation of that in about 1974-75, and there was a fairly large control project that was run that year cooperatively with the Forest Service and the private landowner community. At this time, it's kind of located on the, looks like on the south end of the Wallowa-Whitman National Forest, a little bit on private lands, and we'll kind of see how that particular piece goes. The second part of the question that was asked yesterday was, kind of what's the state doing about forest health, particularly in eastern Oregon? And I had referenced two pieces. One was some recommendations that the department had put together in this colored brochure. And inside, you'll find a series of action steps that we had recommended that landowners take in order to improve forest health on their lands. And then I had also referenced the work that the governor had done by putting together a forest science panel, and out of that taking some recommendations and developing an action plan. And this Eastside Forest Health Strategy is what came out of the governor's office as a result of working with that health panel, but also with the citizens panel that I also referenced, and in collaboration with us. So I thought that might be just kind of useful background information as a follow-up to our conversation yesterday.
Okay, if comment on the bear damage that caught my attention.
Pardon?
The bear damage. Would you comment on that?
The bear population in western Oregon has, what we can tell, has increased as a result of a lack of hunting, particularly when the measure passed that prevented hunting with dogs. Bears. Some bears, not all bears, tend to like to go in and strip the bark off young trees, those that are generally 6 to 8 inches in diameter, in order to get at the sugar content from the sap. And in some stands, they can do a lot of damage. And so the landowners will, work through us to do an aerial survey to identify where these problems are occurring. And then they'll work with Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife on special hunts in order to reduce the population to an acceptable level. What little we know about it is it appears to be a trained habit. That is, a sow will teach a cub to eat, from that source. And I know that Representative Krieger has had extensive damage on properties that he manages from bear damage, and is currently experiencing a significant amount of damage. And it's somewhat sporadic on a geographic basis, and kind of associated with the age and size of the stands.
Um, 34,000 acres per year damaged. Does that mean 340,000 acres in 10 years?
If that, I don't have a 10-year figure, but that's what it'll roll up to at that rate. And that doesn't mean every tree on those acres, but it varies from light to severe, and severe can mean a lot of trees on your property.
Okay, so if there's 400 trees on an acre, they might damage 100, but that's an acre of damage, or
that would be an acre of damage.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Any Anybody else have a comment? Representative Krieger?
I think it's not only that. Like, I have planted 57,000 trees, 59,000. I'm probably at about 10% loss, and you take the roughly 6,000 trees and see what they're worth at maturity. That's what the cost is, because they're always due to after you've done your pre-commercial thin, and you're into thinnings and second, you know, your second entry. It's a big investment that we lose, not only to the landowner, but the taxes that would come off from jobs created. We also experience it, I think, to a higher degree in my area within the riparian zones where we're trying to leave trees for salmon and that. So it's a, you know, you're protecting this guy, but he's killing the trees that are providing the shade and large weight debris down the line. So compounds.
Okay, if no more questions on that material from yesterday, I'll go ahead and follow up with a budget presentation, and I'd begin behind the equipment pool tab. We briefly covered a little bit of this yesterday. The department does maintain an equipment pool. It is a non-limited fund program. We wish it was unlimited.
Yeah, right. So you caught yourself today.
I had to think about that. and in the equipment pool, we have our rolling stock, that is our vehicles, both lightweight as well as heavyweight vehicles. So that includes our passenger vehicles, aircraft, pickups, trucks, trailers, because we use fifth-wheel tractor trailers for fire cache vans, kitchens, shower units, and so forth when we go out on fires. All of that's in our equipment pool. And various pieces of heavy equipment, such as dozers and so forth.
Representative Krupp has a question.
Jim, what type of aircraft are you flying, and for what purpose?
We have two aircraft, Representative Krupp. One is a Partnavia. It's an Italian aircraft. It has a bubble nose, much like a helicopter, and it's what's set up is what they call an observer. That's how we do our insect and disease surveys, and then we contract for other surveys. I was mentioning yesterday that the landowner community collaborates with us for us to do a bear damage survey. We've contracted with Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife to do seals, you know, mammal, marine mammal surveys.
It's a great airplane for that.
Yeah, it's a super aircraft for that.
And the other one?
The other one's a Cessna 414. It's a six-place aircraft, and we use that principally. Our principal business reason for having it is to ferry people and a modest amount of supplies on fires when we're doing fire control. But we, during the off season, we also use that in order to take staff out to our remote regional offices in order to conduct our business.
How many hours a year are you flying those aircraft?
I think it's on the order of a couple hundred hours a year, and then we, in addition for that, we contract for some additional aircraft usage. And we've done cost comparisons. Our rates are well within, actually cheaper than commercial rates, because we're getting that level of usage out of the aircraft.
Good. The 414 is a good airplane. I've got some time in that airplane. Great airplane for your mission.
It is.
So is the other one, too, I have to say. For probably can't find a better aircraft for actually trying to observe from the air.
Well, there are two of you in the United States.
And you have one.
We have one.
Okay. Wow. That's great.
We're
Thank you,
good
Rick.
Care of it, I would assume.
We are.
Yes, spare parts are hard to come by.
I hope it doesn't break down.
On the Marty has put up here the... where we have our automotive shops, we have those in most of our district offices, and we do contract work for some of the other state agencies such in these remote locations. So, for example, for the Department of Fish and Wildlife or Parks Department, occasionally for Transportation Department or even DAS, we'll do some of the work for vehicles that are in those communities through our auto shops.
Madam Chair.
Representative Krupp.
Thank you. What's the age of your vehicle fleet, and typically what's your policy in terms of, because you're separate than the motor pool, mm-hmm.
Correct. We have our own motor pool.
You have your own motor pool. And so what is your policy in regards to how many miles, those types of things, before you turn a vehicle over?
We have a worksheet, if you will, that we have our mechanics fill out on vehicles. That it's more than just miles. It's what's its expected cost during the coming 2 or 3 years. And when we try to find a crossover point where it's going to affect cost you more to keep it than it is to turn it in. So we use that type of an analytic approach in order to manage our motor pool. So we don't go on a fixed mileage rate. So I mean, just because something turns 70 or 80,000 miles, we don't turn it. We look at its specific usage and what type of mechanical repair it's in, and is it still meeting the mission of the agency. And then we have an internal motor pool committee made up of our district managers and some Salem staff that sit down and review the replacement requests, so that, you know, just because the manager says they want a new vehicle doesn't mean they get it. It goes through a screening process, and our rules are set up to match the rules that the Department of Administrative Services has laid out for statewide motor pools, so we're in full compliance with that. We have a very good cost tracking system so that we know what each individual, as well as each individual type of vehicle, is costing us, so that we can determine, as an example, if a particular make and model of a pickup, as an example, is meeting our mission needs, or whether they're not, in which case then we'll over time go to a different model, if you will, if necessary.
And Madam Chair, if I may, would there be some advantage? I know you do have some vehicles that could be purchased en masse along with the rest of the state motor pool purchases. And the reason I'm getting at this, because in last session I sat on General Government Ways and Means, and we had the motor pools budget in front of us. And in talking with them, they could possibly produce a program of if they coordinated their purchases with other states and buy in very large blocks like some states do, or California does on its own, to where they could get such a good deal, they could run those as program cars, whereas they could produce a profit actually as a state motor pool department by running those vehicles 20,000, 25,000 miles, because there are many states that actually do have profitable profit centers in their motor pool departments because they're able to buy en masse. The problem with that was that they would need a very large one-time infusion of money to go out and buy a whole lot of new vehicles all at once. Would that be advantageous to you in terms of some of your more basic vehicles? I know you have some very highly specialized pieces of equipment that wouldn't apply to, but if we could produce a system that bought large blocks of automobiles, would that be an advantage to you?
I think the short answer is yes, Representative Krupp. We currently do work with DAS on fleet purchase, if you will, of the types of vehicles that aren't specialized. So, you know, so I'm saying outside the heavy,
right,
the heavy vehicles.
Right.
But we currently do that with them now.
Okay.
But you know, if you're able to expand that, if you will, so that we even pick up more buying power, I think that's great.
Well, it's not likely to happen in this budget session, but it ought to be something that our state looks at some point in the future, because it could, in fact, be a profit center for us as opposed to a drain, which is what it is today.
The thing that's been helpful to us by having a non-limited fund account for this is that as we conduct our business, we're able to put both our operating as well as replacement revenue into this account, so the time we need vehicles, we're able to purchase them. And that's unlike many states where an agency like ours would have to come to you for an appropriation to do that. And as a result, their equipment over time deteriorates very, very badly, as to the point they can't meet their mission. So as a state, we've been fortunate in setting up these types of accounts.
And you are wise to do so, I believe, Madam Chair, because that flexibility is something that is problematic in the state motor pool department, because one of the other things that came out in last session's budget hearing is that they have gone to extending the time that they keep vehicles in the state motor pool now up to 75,000 miles instead of 55,000 miles. And there's an exponential decrease in the value of the automobile at that time when they turn them over. Plus, there's an exponential increase in maintenance costs. And that's one of the reasons I ask you about how do you determine when it's time to do that?
Now, as it relates to the budget, there are no program option packages associated with this. It's basically a current service level of budget. The next section of the budget that I'd like to cover is capital improvement. In this particular budget, we are requesting about not quite $3.4 million of current service level for capital improvement on a variety of facilities that we have scattered across the state. And we are asking, as part of the governor's recommended budget, a program option package of $493,500 of other fund dollars for capital improvement in a set of facilities that are there. And you can see those, the specific projects for both the current service level budget as well as the program option packages on pages J3 through J5. And I think Marty had a slide up that showed, again, our facilities. We are, like some of the other natural resource agencies, such as parks and the Department of Fish and Wildlife, that we do own our own facilities, have for 50, 60 years. And most of them were built around the time of the three C's, the WPA. And they're fairly, not all, but fairly old buildings that we're having to put more money into. We do evaluations. We'll show you that some of that when we get into the capital construction budget. Do evaluations on the buildings and make decisions at times when it's necessary to replace them, as opposed to just continue to put money into them.
Madam Chair.
Representative Krupp.
In your option package, it looks like the lion's share of that money is going into your headquarters building here in Salem, roughly. $477,000.
Yes, that's correct, Representative Krupp.
What's the? I see HVAC install and plumbing upgrade. HVAC stands for
heating, ventilation, air conditioning.
Okay.
And the State Forester's compound was built in 1938, and the building, the house-like building that I'm in, was built as the State Forester's headquarters. And is actually on the historic register because it was built by the three C's, the WPA. The wood products industry at the time donated all the lumber, so each office is paneled in a different wood. So my office is an example, it's paneled in myrtle wood. Another office my deputy is in has what's called matchbook burley maple on the walls. So it's a beautiful building, but it is in bad need of an upgrade in both plumbing as well as the heating ventilation system. It's really the heating of the time, if you will, and we've continued to have problems with that. Last biennium, we had to have the building rewired because we almost not only burnt our building down, but burnt down an adjacent building where the major electricity for the compound came in, and it ours backflashed through a standpipe in this other building. So we actually had to go in and get that remedied. So what we're trying to do here is take care of some basic maintenance for that old building. Now the other buildings were all dirt floor warehouses, and over time were converted into offices. And the legislature made a decision about four sessions ago that the other buildings, based on some studies that we had done professionally, that weren't worth keeping, and that we ought to basically start over. And you have approved two phases of a reconstruction project where we moved all of our shop facilities to 3 acres that sit behind the Department of Transportation's maintenance yard. That phase is done, and we're now about this in April, we'll be letting a contract for the next phase, which will put up two new buildings, one for our operating programs, Fire Force Practices, State Forest, and another one that we call the Public Service Building, which will include personnel, public affairs, as well as a Board of Forestry meeting room. And that's actually a nice lead into the capital construction budget, because we last session were asked to delay the sale of the COP by which we're paying for this reconstruction. And in so doing, our costs for this phase two, we anticipate, is going to be about $1.5 million more than we had originally anticipated. So what we're asking, and this is, I have to point out, this is not in the governor's recommended budget, but we've been told it's okay to discuss this with you. We're asking for $135,946 of general fund and about $83,000 of other fund in order to service the debt on the additional $1.5 million of COP. So that, when you look at page K3, what I'm talking about is that final completion of the Salem compound phase and the selling of $1.5 million of a COP, and that's the next biennial cost that I referenced there. The other two pieces in the capital construction budget are the authority to go forward with the Tillamook Forest Interpretive Center, and the authorization would be for $13.5 million. Now that's all other fund. And I mentioned earlier that the department had committed $3 million of money off of State Forest for that, but the rest of it will be gathered through grants. I mean, that is donations from interested parties and organizations, philanthropic institutions, and we feel that towards the end of this biennium, we will have completed that capital construction, that capital campaign, and be in a position to begin that particular project. We talked a little bit about that earlier when we discussed the state forest program. The final piece that's recommended in the governor's budget is the construction of a new headquarters in Tillamook. Representative Hobson referenced that in her comments. The building that we have there is fairly old and small for the needs that we have. And we have acquired property adjacent to the existing headquarters where this new facility would go. Our old facility would then be rented to the Department of Fish and Wildlife, who is currently in a couple of really old buildings on our Tillamook compound there. And this particular project would be $6.5 million of other fund.
Madam Chair. And in this other fund is COP also?
In this particular case, no. We would in this particular case, we would pay for that out of the account we have for State Forest.
Okay.
The revenues off of State Forest.
Right.
So this would
this building is principally, the people that are principally housed in that particular office work on State Forest. So, and then what we would do would rent, if you will, back space for the fire control program, forest practices program on a square footage basis to the other program. So the state forest program would basically buy this building.
And over what length of time, Madam Chair, if I may, my apologies.
Well, may I just have one point of clarification here? So the money to build the district headquarters in Tillamook would come out of money that if it didn't go in this direction, it would go into the common school fund?
No. Madam Chair, the money that would come from for this would come from the sinking fund. When we sell timber off of Board of Forestry lands, we keep 36.25%. That goes into a sinking fund, and that we use to manage the land as well as to do projects like this when you approve them. And this money would come out of that sinking fund. It would not impact the common school fund.
Thank you.
Thank you. And how long, will you just write a check for this in 1 year, or how will you?
We would write a, yeah, once the building is completed.
Do you have, and Madam Chair, if I may?
Yes.
Do you have, is the sinking fund, does it have a large amount of money in it that you can just write a check for this?
Yes.
And you have the sinking fund for the purposes of these types of things?
Well, it's principally aimed at the investments back into the land.
Okay.
And to, when necessary, to do maintenance that you, again, under the capital improvement budget that you approve, or in this case, if you approve this project, to pay for this type of a project. We try to maintain anywhere from 10 to 20 million dollars in that fund in order, because if you go through a recession, you've got to have enough capital to carry you through that. And we've done revenue projections that show that we could accommodate this type of a capital construction project, as well as maintain the fiscal budget that we have proposed, or the biennial budget that we have proposed to you in the State Forest Program.
And one last question, Madam Chair. You're going to rent the old, after you build a new building, you rent the old building back to ODF&W. Is there enough rent money coming off of that to, if you were to finance this construction, to pay your interest costs? Or how will you base your rent? Okay. Yeah. There wouldn't be?
Mark is saying no.
But how would you base your rent then to ODF&W? On what basis? Just.
Chair Morgan, members of the committee, Clark Seeley, Assistant State Forester for the Department of Forestry. Chair Morgan, Representative Krupp, will base our rent to ODF&W just on the basis of a fair market value rent for the Tillamook area. It'll be intended to cover our maintenance and operating costs, for upkeep of the building and so forth. But since those old buildings have long since been purchased and covered in terms of original capital, this will just be a rent to pay for the operating cost of the building.
Okay. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
If I recall right, those monies are distributed, are they not?
That's correct.
So the money that we collect from the Department of Fish and Wildlife, part of that money will be distributed to the county, to the counties, because any money that we make that's associated with state forests, be it off the land directly or off a facility like that, under the law, is distributed.
Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That sort of leads into my question. Does this sinking fund have an actual name?
It's called the Forest Development Fund. And you can find it in Chapter 530. I can't give you the specific quote.
That's good enough. And if I might follow up, you indicated that 36.5% of timber sales off state forests go into that fund.
36.25%.
Okay. Can you tell us what the other 63.75% goes into?
Yes. I can go to page G26, which is behind the state forest tab. C, 26C, and that's the one you're looking at there, Representative Nolan. Mm-hmm. Under the law, the remaining amount is distributed to the counties in which the timber is harvested. And so we send a check. Let's use Tillamook County or Clatsop County as an example, and we'll send it to the county treasurer. The county treasurer will then distribute the money in the following way. The counties are allowed to keep not less than 10% of that money for their general fund. And then the balance they distribute to the taxing districts in their county. And the first one that they do is to the county school fund. I think 25% goes to the county school fund. And then they distribute the balance to the taxing districts, of which the county school fund is a taxing district. The county is a taxing district, but so are all the schools. and in some cases, libraries and rural fire departments. And so when you, if you will, moosh all that together across the counties, where that 66.75% goes is shown in this graph. So the money that goes to the counties in the end, about 27% ends up in the county treasury, 20% in the common county school fund. And as I was mentioning the other day, that's principally used, at least where we've examined, to pay for the back billing that the counties get for kids that go to Dornbecker's or to Hillcrest or Fairview or wherever. And then if there's any money left over, it actually goes into K through 12. Then about 38% goes in directly into K through 12 through the school districts. And about a little less than 6% goes into other education, I assume the ESDs. And then about 8% goes to the other taxing districts, again, the rural fire departments, the libraries, that sort of thing. So that's where that money goes.
Another follow-up, if I might.
Nola?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this distribution is set by statute.
Correct.
The 36.25% that remains in this forest development fund, what are the allowed uses for those funds?
It's fairly broad in terms of the management of the land. So, you know, it doesn't say X percent into roads or timber sales or recreation or whatever. It's really allocated to the departments. Actually, it's in two different pieces of the formula. We're allowed to keep, if you will, 15% off the top, and then take another 25%. So that's how you get to 36.25%.
And I can look up
the
statute and learn the details.
I think it's in 531.10 or 115, if I recall.
I can find it. Okay. But that is separate from the lands you manage for DSL.
In the case of the common school lands, we have a contract with the land board. Actually, it's between the land board and myself, and we are reimbursed for our expenses. They up front approve our budget, and then all the revenues that we get, we send to the Common School Fund, and then they in turn reimburse us for our expenses.
Thank you. Representative Hayden.
Several questions, Madam Chair. This graph on 26C doesn't show the 36.25% sinking fund then.
It does not. That's correct.
That would be $35 million in addition then.
Pardon?
It would be maybe $35 million more, this graph.
Yeah, our annual budget for this program is somewhere around $11 million annually. So it's about $22 million for the biennial,
yeah,
as I recall.
And then with these resources available to you in cash, Mr. Brown, plus the standing resources that you have that are available for harvest, why do you need why do you need to work with COPs?
In the because the other programs, I mean, a building such as what we're doing with the headquarters office is prorated across all of our programs. That is fire, force practices, forestry assistance, state forests. And in the case of, and so the difference between the Tillamook office and the headquarters office is the Tillamook office is principally houses people operating on state forests. Thus, we feel we can legitimately use monies out of that fund for that purpose. In the case of the Salem headquarters office, because of the prorate, if you will, the proportional share that the different programs operate, we didn't feel that was an appropriate use of that money. And secondly, didn't feel there was enough money in there to do that. Does that make sense? No.
I didn't understand that. You want, should he take one more shot at it, or do we want to move on?
Definitely.
Okay.
We'll see. The Salem, the reason we sold COPs or recommend, and you can, and was concurred with selling the COPs was we, the COPs will be paid on a square footage basis, a rental basis, by each of the programs that are using the space. So if our protection from fire program is using 20,000 square feet, they're going to pay rent on 20,000 square feet in order to repay the COP. And likewise, for the Forest Practices Program, people in the State Forest Program, forestry assistants, our finance shop, et cetera. You know, had we, I suppose, had we had enough money in the sinking fund for State Forest, we could have, if you will, borrowed from ourselves, but we didn't have sufficient funds for that size of a project. It's about, how many $1 million project is? Yeah, total project for the rebuilding the Salem compound is about $20 million. We didn't have that type of, if you will, cash sitting in the sinking fund to do that. Thus, we had recommended to you and previous sessions that approved us selling COPs and repaying that by paying ourselves rent.
May I continue, Madam Chair? Mm-hmm. Have you used COPs to this extent for capital projects in the past?
We have not.
This is your first time?
Yes.
I yield the floor, Madam Chair, but I'm a little dubious about that type of expenditure with borrowed money.
I had a couple of questions concerning the sinking fund. So what this is then is a mechanism to maintain cash flow and also a capital improvement fund for things that relate to state forests. Am I getting the picture on what this is?
With the sinking fund is aimed at paying for all management costs associated directly with the state forest program, be it and most of that goes back into land management activities.
And there is a balance of between 10 and 20 million in the fund all the time?
Yes.
Is it invested in something, or does it just, where does it actually sit?
It sits in the state treasury, and it is invested, and currently the interest off that account goes into the state's general fund. And we have a bill, 2164, suggesting that instead of the general fund getting that interest, that remain with the program so that we can do some of the...
And that would go to the interpretive center.
It could. We're suggesting that interest go into some of the public values that Representative Nolan has talked about.
Okay. Now, Representative...
Thank you. That ties it together for me, since House Bill 2164 was in our committee that we had passed out previously. How much money is in, I'm not clear how much money is in that fund right now, and then how much do you normally get on a biannual basis from the sale, or from sales, I should say.
On the Board of Forestry lands, if you look at page G26B, shows you the revenues and expenditures of the department from 1990 up through the year 2000. So, you know, adding the reddish bar to the blue bar would tell you how much revenues, you know, we produce off state forest in any particular year are pretty close.
Oh, so you're saying that you add those two bars together to come up with your total
revenue that we generate.
That you generate in. And out of that total revenue, 36.25% goes into the Forest Development Fund.
Right. And the balance is distributed to the counties, and they in turn make the further distribution that you see on 26.
Right, right, yeah.
Now, that's okay. How that ties together.
Okay.
And then the second part of your question is?
How much money is in there right now?
Madam Chair, Representative Krupp, the current balance of the Forest Development Fund is about $25 million. The recent history, the last 4 or 5 years, we've seen an increase from 16 million approximately to 23 million to current 25 million. Most of that increase is simply a result of increased harvest activity and a fairly favorable market at least a couple of years ago.
But that fund historically has ranged from as low as $8 million to that as a high.
So the 25 million is an all-time high then for the?
Well, in recent history, it has been. Yeah, that's right. That is probably the current high. When we go into a recessionary period and sales fall off, then that fund goes down quite a bit.
Sure.
Our goal has been to maintain between 6 and 9 months of operating expenses in that fund, so because otherwise we get into the cycle of having to lay people off, and prefer not to do that.
It's too bad we couldn't teach ODF&W to do something like this.
Well, there's always the Fish Endowment Fund.
No, let's not go there.
I'm with him.
Thank you. I appreciate those answers.
Further questions? You have, no? Please continue.
The only problem? Well, no, that's not true. That's a lot of their money problems.
What I've asked Marty to do is, I think what we've tried to illustrate for you over the last 3 days is, you know, as we think about the work of the department, we've tried to identify what we call core business functions, which is different than the 6 or 7 businesses we're in, and that is to provide forest policy that provides a favorable climate within which landowners can practice forestry, so that in turn the public gets the benefits that accrue from that, social, economics, as well as environmental. And the assessment project that we talked about yesterday is a key piece of that, as well, which then evolves into this policy document that we talked about earlier this afternoon. The second piece of that then is minimizing the loss of forest resources from fire, insect, and disease. That is really maintaining forest health, if is another way to put that. The third piece then is the management of state-owned forest lands, and then finally is facilitating stewardship on private lands through education, assistance, and regulation, with a focus on meeting the landowner's objectives while providing for this broader array of public values. And then we do have internal service businesses that provide support to the agency in order to do that. And I think what we've tried to do over the last 3 days is illustrate to you how the investments you make in our budget result in us accomplishing these core business functions through the operating programs that we have, that is fire, forest practices, state forest, forestry assistance, the nursery, and then the internal service businesses. So with that, Madam Chair, that would conclude my presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions the committee might have.
Questions, comments?
Madam Chair, we are not going to at this time have LFO's recommendation. We're not going to hear that.
That's correct. We are. We didn't receive the budget document that we needed to work with until the end of last week, and we just simply haven't had time to work through the issues with the agency. So my intention is to have public testimony, public input tomorrow, and then we won't meet on Friday. And when we have concluded the discussions with the Department of Forestry, we'll bring the budget back in. So if there are no further comments or questions, I will adjourn, and we will meet again at 1 o'clock tomorrow for public testimony.